This is The Instigators, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are going to overtime!
We are back at it here on The Instigators Overtime Podcast. Marty, what a season it has been in the hockey world, and that encompasses all levels. And boy, wasn't it punctuated perfectly, just the journey it can be when you look at Colorado's head coach in Jared Bednar. First one to be a Stanley Cup winner on the heels of winning the Calder Cup and the Kelly Cup. It's amazing the dedication it takes within the game. Our guest today is truly dedicated to the game. His dream still very much alive in Andrew Podorolski. And he too is coming off of a Calder Cup. This should be an awful lot of fun today. Having him on the show, a Buffalo hockey product, what does it make you think of?
Well, it makes me think of a lot of things. One, every time the Calder Cup is awarded every year, it pinches my heart for where we were in 1999 with the Rochester Americans losing to the Providence Bruins because I never got to the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, having to work so hard and got so close to a championship. My brother won the Calder Cup with Hamilton in 2007. So I look back and I think, wow, we were so close. And I think of my teammates and the team that we had there. So yeah, it's interesting. And plus, I've got to know Potsy now for the last few years, and he's a great guy and an unbelievable hockey player. So it's great to have him on the pod today.
When you're serious about the game, bet on Buffalo at the only sports books in Western New York. Seneca Resorts and Casinos betting counters are open daily, and self-service betting kiosks are available 24/7 at all three locations. Whether you visit Seneca Niagara, Allegheny, or Buffalo Creek, the Sports Lounge features the latest lines and multiple screens so you never miss a play. The Sportsbook at Seneca Resorts and Casinos, where the love of the game meets the thrill of the win. Andrew, it's great to see your smiling face. Congratulations on yet another Calder Cup championship. How would you describe this latest round of success for you and your teammates?
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on here. And, you know, this whole year has been amazing, especially for me and my family. We welcomed our first child into the world here. And just, you know, the success we had as a team and how much fun we've been having playing hockey all year. It's been so much fun, and we're just trying to live in the moment, enjoy it all, soak it in, and you know, make the most of it.
What's going on with that beard? Like, playoffs are over. Why is it still on your face?
we've been out having a good time. I haven't even got a chance to get in there, but I definitely need to shave it off. We have a rally tonight, so I'll have to find some time here to get it off.
Is there a parade or just a rally or a get together? What's the post Calder Cup celebration been like in Chicago?
Yeah, I was expecting a big thing. Like, I watched The Last Dance throughout the playoffs. I thought they're gonna have the whole park filled up like Jordan for us, but no, just a little rally or something in our rink. You know, the fans are gonna come out, sign autographs after, stuff like that. I think it'll be a good time to have our families there who weren't able to be there when we won on the road, but we're looking forward to it for sure.
What's it like as, you know, an AHL market in Chicago? You had the luxury of winning with Charlotte against Chicago, and now as still with the Canes organization, but the shoe being on the other foot and doing it in Chicago. How would you describe what it's like there?
Yeah, it definitely was awesome to, first of all, win for this organization, because I took a lot of cheap shots at all the staff throughout the year because we beat them in the finals back in the day. But now to actually bring them one too is pretty cool, and obviously it's a lot of fun. But Chicago is a great place to play hockey, and you know, I have a lot of fun. And we're kind of out in the suburbs, and the Chicago area is so big. So obviously downtown, everyone there, you know, supports the Hawks and everything. But to be in the suburbs, we get a great following as well, and it's a lot of fun. And you know, a lot of people still think we're affiliated with the Blackhawks. The average fan would think that, but, you know, we actually played Rockford in the first round, so it was nice to take care of them, but it's great. We have a lot of fun. Fans are great. And yeah, I can't say enough about how much fun we've had this whole year.
So you win the Calder Cup with the Charlotte Checkers in 2019. And then you look for an opportunity to, you know, continue your career. You were 25 years old, I think, and are looking to go somewhere where you want a chance to the NHL, and you signed with Anaheim, played 2 years in San Diego, no finals in 2020, no finals in 2021 when it comes to the AHL. So now you return with Carolina, name the captain, and win the cup. Was there a weird dynamic there? Did they say, oh, we just needed Potsy back for us to finally get to win again? How did that all work out?
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy couple of years. In my books, it's back-to-back cups, but
it was
a crazy couple of years. And obviously with COVID and everything, it was, you know, the taxi squad last year in free agency was pretty unique. But, you know, Ryan Warsawski, our head coach here, was our assistant in Charlotte when we won. And, you know, he called me over the summer and presented a great opportunity for me to be here. And by no means did I think I was going to be captain or anything, but he pulled me aside after like our first team dinner and talked to me about it. It's a tremendous honor, and such a, you know, franchise like the Wolves in the AHL. There's a ton of history. So to be named captain was a lot of fun. I tried not to change up too much in who I am. And, you know, we just had an excellent team and made my job pretty easy as captain. And obviously to win, you know, says enough about this team. So we had so much fun. And it's crazy that we've now won two in our time here, and it's been great.
The Wolves really do have an incredible history, predating the AHL with the IHL, and they have been a terrific franchise in the American Hockey League too. You have accomplished so much. I mean, here you are again coming off another playoff. You had 23 points in both playoff runs on route to Calder Cups. You were a playoff MVP. You've been AHL leading scorer the last 2 years. You were a conference leading scorer in college. I mean, the accolades keep mounting, and yet I'm guessing the dream is still very much alive to get to the NHL on a full-time basis. You were there this year with Carolina. You got a couple of points, your first two in the NHL. What is continuing to fuel you at this point?
Yeah, like, I mean, you pretty much nailed it. You know, I like to consider myself a pretty soft-spoken guy, but obviously super competitive on the ice. And my dream since I've been a kid has always been to play in the NHL. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't fully happened for me yet. And, you know, that's my motivation every day when I'm working hard in the summers, when I'm playing games during the season. And, you know, I'd like to think with everything I've done now these last couple of years that, you know, hopefully I'll get an opportunity somewhere. And that's all you really can ask for at this stage. And at this game, you know, nothing's really handed out to you. You got to work for everything. And I felt that I've done that. And just like an opportunity to show that I can prove people wrong. And, you know, I can play in the NHL. And it's such a tough business, though. And, you know, sometimes chances are based off of luck or, you know, guys getting hurt or whatnot. And, you know, the Canes were healthy pretty much the entire season, minus that little stretch when guys got COVID, and that's when we got our chance. But other than that, there were really no call-ups. And you look at some different organizations, though, and they'll have like 10 forwards out at a time, and, you know, so many guys are getting called up. So it's just about being right place, right time. But at the same time, you know, you got to work for and earn your opportunities. And you know, hopefully I put myself in a position this summer to, you know, have a couple good different opportunities, or wherever I may end up. I really have no clue, but definitely just want to get to the NHL, just like pretty much everybody in the AHL. And everyone thinks they, you know, have a case as to why they should be, but just got to put the head down and keep working. That's all you really can do.
I mean, the points speak for themselves, right? Over 100 points this year. You had more than an assist a game. You had like 73 assists in 72 games, I think, something to that effect. So pretty impressive. Now, I'm sure you heard the last few years, well, you know, you're a good player, but you're right there on the cusp of the NHL. But, and I've gotten to know you now a little bit more the last couple of years, but, and I know you're putting a lot of work. So, look, all the GMs are listening to this show. So if you had to plead your case and say, this is what I've been doing to get to the NHL, and I got way better in this, that, and the other thing. What would those things be?
So my biggest thing that I took from my feedback when I was in Anaheim and also earlier in my career was that my skating wasn't quite there and that I wasn't fast enough to play in the NHL. And I kind of took that personal last summer, and I hired a track coach, and I completely changed all my workouts all summer. And it wasn't so much as, weightlifting like I typically would do, where I still did some weights, but it was more all explosive stuff. I was on out on the turf or out on the track 2 to 3 times a week. And my whole workouts were just geared towards that. And I didn't even tell the Canes I was doing this. And as soon as I got to camp within a week, Brindamore and my coach, Warsawski here, both pulled me aside and said they noticed that I've gotten a lot faster since the last time they seen me and asked if I changed anything. So it's pretty cool to see that they noticed that right off the bat. And I think, the name of the game right now is speed, with all these young guys coming in and everyone just wants to be fast and play fast. So to have that now in my game, where I think I've improved a lot on that, and there's still room to improve. I'm going to keep doing that as well this summer. And I think just adding a little bit of speed to my game, helped me even up my production even more.
Did they ask you how many rounds of golf you play in the summer? And did it affect your golf game as well, Potts? Because I know your handicap keeps getting lower and lower and lower.
As you might think, I'm trying to get that handicap higher and higher to get more strokes. But
you're going the wrong way now, because as people in the golf world know, like, you have a 4 handicap, a 3 handicap, a 2 handicap. When you get to 0, you end up in the pluses. So are you working your way to the plus side, or you're trying to get back to the other side?
No, I've had my day when I could have said I was a scratch golfer, but now I'm about getting the fair advantage, like some people would say, and I'll take my strokes when I can get them. And just ask your good friend Dave Leggio. I think our handicaps are pretty similar now, and I always tell him he's got to start giving me strokes because I haven't played in so long, and he's like, there's no chance I'll ever give you a shot the rest of my life. So but I got a couple excuses now. I had a long season, wasn't able to golf, I have a kid, so
baby. Yeah, that's
I'll
for
be,
sure
I'll be throwing those all out on the first tee.
Is there anything else you've done in your preparation for hockey that you haven't told the Canes or any other organization about?
You're thinking that does Duffer know something?
No, you just said you didn't tell them about your explosive, explosive training. So I just thought, maybe you dramatically changed your diet, or maybe, who knows? Could be anything.
No,
you showed up to camp and all of a sudden you shoot the other way. They're
exactly.
Like, what? Like, he's a righty, he used to be a lefty, or vice versa.
It was just really cool to see that they noticed that so quickly in the training camp. And you put that work in all summer, and it's hard to really feel it or tell it yourself until you get in a game or something. But because the speed, the difference is just, it's so minimal, but it makes such a big difference if you can gain a couple of split seconds, or get a half step on a guy, and then it gives you an extra split second to make a play. I like to think that I can make plays, and now if I have a little bit of extra time, it's huge.
You mentioned Warsawski as your coach. Obviously, in your time in San Diego, you had Kevin Dineen. I mean, rewind it for us all the way back to Nichols. Like, who are some of the greater influences and mentors you've had along the way, and words that you've taken from all of them that continue to help you today?
Yeah, I mean, I could easily go down the line of all my coaches I've had growing up. And it's pretty funny, when I was younger, I played for Wheatfield Blades, and most of my teammates now, when they ask me, oh, where'd you play growing up, did you play for Buffalo Regals? Because that was a big organization, and my parents always wanted me to develop more than play for the big franchise. And I played for Pete Scamura, who was our coach there, and he played in the NHL for a long time. And to have a coach like that develop me when I was young, he would always push me, and whenever I was doing really well when I was younger, he wouldn't let me be satisfied. He'd make sure I was doing extra work on the side. So, to have a coach like that influence you when you're so young and to grow you, to help you grow up during your developmental days was huge. And then, you know, I played for Morris Titanic too in Wheatfield, Grant Ledger, Junior Sabres. I had Jamie Prince at Nichols, but you know, a lot of three of those four guys, all NHL coaches, and you know, to help you during your younger days and have guys who are, you know, who've been there and you know, can show you the ropes. It's huge. And even when I went to Cedar Rapids in the USHL, I had Mark Carlson, and most people are familiar with the USHL. They know he's a hard coach and, you know, super hard to play for, but he pushed me so much. And when I got to college, it made my job so much easier. And I felt like I was, you know, three steps ahead of all the other freshmen who were there. So, you know, I've been super lucky and fortunate to have good coaches throughout my career. And obviously wouldn't be here without them.
I look at your elite prospect page. And by the way, Pete Scamura's daughter, Haley, was on this show before when she came back with a silver medal. We've talked to her, so she's amazing. But you played 3 years at Nichols, one season that doesn't show any stats. Now, were you injured in those years? Is there a reason why? I don't know. I'm looking at it. Usually means like you had an injury or something. So did something happen at Nichols, or were you always pretty healthy growing up and working your way through the ranks happened pretty easily?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check what year that is, but I actually broke my leg 1 year when I was at Nichols. It was actually pretty crazy. It was within 2 years, I broke my leg three times. It was once when I was at Nichols my junior year, then once with the Junior Sabres, that's why I only played like half a season, and then once in the summer that next summer going into Cedar Rapids. And those were not, I don't want to blame it that was my draft year, but it was kind of like the years where those were my first two draft years. And you know, I had three pretty major injuries in a row there, but so yeah, those are definitely, you know, big things in my career and helped me get through it. And it was definitely a crazy time, and to go through those three all within that span was a lot. Yikes.
What do you remember about Sabres development camp in July of 2015?
I remember our it was the hardest development camp I've ever been to, for sure. And then the scrimmage, the blue and gold game was unreal, because it was Eichel's year and it was fully sold out crowd in the middle of July. It shows the kind of hockey market that's in Buffalo. And I think I scored a garbage goal late in the game to have all my friends and family who were there give them something to talk about. But it was awesome. And, you know, obviously when you get to put on the hometown colors, I grew up a Sabres fan. So to do that was really cool.
Now, you just said you grew up a Sabres fan. I haven't gotten to know you a little bit more the last few years. You know, you told me the story, but was there anybody, any former player ever showed up on your street as a kid, and you would like be excited to see that former player show up and just be like across the street from you at a birthday party or anything like that?
Yeah, there's some neighbors across the street of mine, and I'd go up into the room and there's an old set of Marty Baron pads in there. And next thing you know, we're at a birthday party and there he is. So it's crazy to see things come full circle. But yeah, I got to shout out the Quentin Eskies. It's really funny that, you know, things worked out like that. And that, yeah, when I was a little kid, you were there.
I thought that was funny because I'm like, man, that makes me feel old, right? Like, you're like 28 years old. I must be so old that you were a kid. And I would like show up and, you know, obviously like there was family members that live across the street, and I didn't know that you played, or, you know, that you were into hockey all that much. Like maybe we played street hockey or whatnot, like one time, but now that you're, you know, this kid that, you know, won two Calder Cups and played in games in the NHL, had points in the NHL. When you had your first point in the NHL this year, like it was on the text group with me and Legio and Tim, PGA Pro Tim, and we were all like pumped. So it's kind of like fun that the relationship's gone full circle like that. So yeah, it makes me feel old, Duffer. That's all I got to say.
Tell me about those points that you got though in the NHL. You remember them vividly?
Yeah, it's crazy. So both of them were first shift of both games that I played in this year. So it was pretty cool. first one, they're both power play points as well. And the first one, I think I got a pass, and my my old roommate from Charlotte, our goalie Alex Nedeljkovic, is the Red Wings goalie. So I was so excited. I wanted to score my first goal against him, and I was shooting anything I got. And I just remember before the game, Rod told me, like, I'm up on that flank on a power play when I get the puck to shoot it. So as soon as I got it, I shot it. And, you know, the rebound kicked right over to Nino, and he buried it. And it was just really cool because all the guys knew it was my first point, and they all, like, grabbed the puck and, like, came right to me, even though I didn't even score. So that was obviously really cool. And then, yeah, next game, I think I won a battle, got it up to Slavin at the point. He shot it, and it hit off somebody and went in. So I'll obviously take them. It was awesome. I had a couple of good chances to score, too, that, you know, obviously didn't go in. But I actually have a really funny story about my second game when we're playing LA. We're up 5-1 late in the game. There's maybe like 6-7 minutes left, and obviously the game's out of hand, whatever. And I get the puck like behind their net, and I come out on my like forehand side where you would wrap around, but I tried to go short side high, and I hit quick, like up high, like right in the side of the head, maybe in the neck area. And like, I thought it was a really good chance, almost went in, whatever, but didn't think anything of it. And then I get back to the bench, and there's a TV timeout, and Quick comes flying over to our bench, and we're all like, everyone's kind of like looking, I'm in the middle of the bench, I have no idea what's going on. And he goes, who shot that puck at the end? And I'm like kind of happy, I was like, oh, is he gonna like say nice shot? And and one of my buddies who also is called up, Levo, he's like, Podorowski 57 right there, and like points me out, and he goes, what are you doing shooting that puck? It's 5-1, you're hitting me in the side of the head, what are you doing? And I was like, I've never scored in the NHL before, like I was like at a loss for words, I didn't know what to say. And then like the whole Canes bench like caught a hold of what was going on, and they all started like yelling and chirping that Quick to like get out of there. And Brenda Moore was even chirping, and everyone was just like dying laughing, like that was so crazy. But he wasn't happy with me for trying to score that late in the game when it was already out of hand and hitting him. But I was like, I've never scored in the NHL before, so I'm going hard to the whistle.
I could just see like the LA Kings calling on July 13th and saying, look, Calder Cup champion captain Andrew Podorowski, we'd love to have you on the Kings next year. Here's a contract offer. First day of training camp, you come in and you just put one right bullseye on Jonathan Quick and say, hey, remember that one last year? I'm doing it again, bud. Like, just set the tone. I mean, he's got to know who you are right there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's got a Stanley Cup Hall of Famer, but I was just at a loss for words. It's so funny.
That's such a great story. And you know, not to make this all serious, but you did play, as you said, in development camp for the Sabres, and obviously every year brings about new opportunities. Have you or your agent in that time since spoken with the Sabres, and do you plan to again this offseason?
I mean, yeah, there's for sure been conversations each year, and there's not really any specifics to get into, but for whatever reason, you know, they haven't really come after me that hard. And, you know, it is what it is. It's a business. I totally get it. And, you know, it's worked out for me, obviously, in other places, but, as far as the future, I mean, I don't hold any grudges or anything. And, you know, I just want to play in the NHL and get my opportunity no matter where it is. And, you know, if it happened to be in Buffalo and I broke free in Buffalo, like, that'd be incredible. Obviously, that's where I grew up watching hockey and got me into hockey. I love, you know, the city of Buffalo. We have a house there, you know, huge Bills fans and all that. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what's going on this summer, and for sure would be open to anything.
Well, I mean, it gets to a point in a career, and you're 28, so you have to make different decisions. My brother actually had to make those decisions later. He was, I think, 30 years old when he said, I'm going to go to Europe. And he went 2 years and played in Germany, made really good money. And it was at a time where the rules were different. You couldn't make more than 100,000 in the minors to hope to get called up, because there was re-entry waivers both ways. It's completely different now. But is this still like, I'm going to search for the NHL spot that I can get to? If you were to have five options in front of you, are you still, that's your number one priority? Or is there, you know, financial securities that you're looking for in a contract? If somebody gives you 2 or 3 years and there's really good money guarantees that would sway you away or the other, or is it NHL and that's the number one thing?
Yeah, I'd say I probably got a year or two left, if even that at most, of saying it's NHL. And, you know, I'm for sure chasing the dream at some point. Like, you got to, you know, factor both in a little bit. Like, you have to, you know, get a little bit of financial security. And, you know, they do a good job of, you know, with the guarantees now in the AHL, it's pretty good. But, yeah, I get calls almost on the daily about the KHL and stuff like that. But where I'm at in my life right now with our family and stuff, it's just not for me right now. I'm not, you know, closing it out in the future. But we obviously want to play in the NHL still. And that's the dream. That's the goal. And we'll see obviously what the offers are as well. I think that's the hardest part right now in my career, is to decide whether, you know, you want to sign somewhere that you truly can have a great setup in the AHL like I do here in Chicago, and, you know, can make a lot of money here in Chicago, or do I go chase something, you know, with a different organization and chase the NHL there? But if it doesn't work out there, maybe the AHL setup isn't so nice. So that's the fine line that you got to, you know, try to pick out and decide. And, you know, hopefully we have some options this summer, and hopefully a couple of good ones.
Do you have other, you know, former teammates or friends in the game that are, you know, guys you lean on for advice in this situation? You know, the hockey world's so small, and you come across so many, you know, I'm sure really good teammates over the years, guys that you can trust for advice. I know everybody's in competition in essence with one another, but what's that dynamic like for you?
Yeah, for sure. And it's so cool to build all these relationships with different guys around the league throughout the years. And, you know, say you get offered from a team that you played with, a guy who's been there, you can call him and ask him, hey, what's it like, blah, blah, blah. And I've gotten those calls too from former teammates and friends. And then, you know, I'm pretty close with Ryan Schmelzer and Dylan McLaughlin, both AHL guys too. And we talk pretty much on the daily. So, you know, they have been sending me what's going on with them in the summer. And, you know, we both give input back and forth. And it's just really cool to have guys who, you know, I train with all summer and do everything together with them all summer. And like you said, we're competing as well, and we play against each other and stuff. But, you know, they can give advice and give what they think as well. So, you know, it's cool to have that.
You talked about Nichols earlier and playing at Wheatfield and all of that. So anybody you played with in that 94 age class that in Buffalo that made it to the NHL or played in the AHL and you thought was going to make it, was there anybody in that group of friends or players you played against that that stood out from the 94 year age group?
Well, I did play up a year for most of my career through minor hockey. So
okay. Okay. You were that good. So you played up a year. I get it. No, I should have known.
I got to give a shot. Alex Iafallo. I mean, I grew up playing against him pretty much my whole life in minor hockey. And, you know, you could always tell how smooth he was and how good of a player he was. And, to see how he's taken off and what he's done with the Kings has been incredible. And, he's such a great player. And then, yeah, just all our group of friends, like Nick DeSimone, another yep. good one, who I just had a great battle with in the Western Conference Finals here. I'm sure he's not too happy with me right now, but he's a great friend of mine, and he's had a pretty good career here so far too. And he's in the similar boat to me, looking to get an opportunity in the NHL. And we just have such a great group.
You're good.
You're good. You're so back.
We're such a great group of guys here in Buffalo who all play pro, and it was actually pretty funny. So first round here, we took down McLaughlin and Carson Gusevich on Rockford. Second round, we took down Bluejus and Cole Schneider in Milwaukee. Then I took down Nick DeSimone's, too bad there are no Buffalo guys on Springfield, but I was hoping Schmelzer's team Utica would make it to the finals. But yeah, it's a great group of, you know, pro guys we got here that push each other in the summers, and also good friends off the ice. So I guess, yeah, I mean, shout out all those guys, but yeah.
Well, the Buffalo, Marty, you'll love this. The Buffalo connection to Springfield will be future former Sabre Charlie Lindgren.
Charlie Lindgren, yes. We're talking goaltenders a lot, and somehow Charlie Lindgren always comes
up. Because I like him because he catches with the right hand. So
okay, I'll ask you this, Potts. Like, you guys played back-to-back games in the finals. It was weird because even you guys use two goaltenders. You use Pyotr Kochetkov and Alex Lyons, which, by the way, we have to talk about him in a little bit. But so did Springfield with Ofer and Lindgren. How weird of a dynamic is that when teams have two goalies and both teams have to use two goalies in the finals? You don't see that too often.
No, you don't. But I think in the AHL, like you said, with the back-to-backs, I think it's huge. And to have two goalies you can rely on, and obviously both of ours were studs all playoffs all season long. And if you go back to our Charlotte days in 2019 when we won, our goalies were Alex Nedeljkovic and Dustin Tokarski. So you know, when Ned had a bad game or something, Tokarski came in and was a stud, and then, you know, Ned would come in the next night and shut the team out. So to have two guys, and you know, it's such a strenuous on your body to play so many games, and like you said, the back-to-backs is crazy. I think if we would have won seven games, the series would have been seven games in like 9 days or something crazy with the travel. So to have two goalies that can play helps so much. And yeah, it's obviously different going against two goalies too when you're on the flip side of it. But we obviously had some success against both guys.
Now, so, true or false, in that team picture, Alex Lyon was simply trying to tell people how many Calder Cups you'd won.
True.
There was two fingers up, so you won two, but they were the middle fingers. Now, I was telling Duffer this, and for those who don't know, Alex Lyon, who was the goaltender in Game 5, pitched a shutout, won the Calder Cup, and in the team picture gave a couple of middle fingers up to something. Now, I can remember we beat Montreal with the Flyers in 5 games, and I was in the middle of an interview with Elliot Friedman, CBC, and our PR guy with the Flyers, Zach Hill, was taking pictures, and I looked over to him and I gave him the old, like the tongue out or whatever. I could have easily have given him the fingers just to be like, hey, what are you doing? Just jokingly, right? What was Alex doing? Like, who was he pointing the fingers at? Because now he's suspended for 2 games next season in the AHL for his gestures.
I know it. Our group chat's been buzzing all day once they announced the suspension today. But there is no good reason or any explanation behind it. He's just a different guy, but it's hilarious. And we all obviously got a great chuckle out of it. I don't know. It's just so funny, and no, it wasn't planned. He didn't tell anyone he was doing it, and our coaches, and no one even saw it until he got suspended and stuff. So,
will he not show up to the rally tonight when they said, "Hey, here comes Alex Lyon, both hands up in the air, left fingers out," like he's got to take it a step further, right?
I'd put good money that there's something that'll be done today for sure.
Get him some foam fingers. That would be really good.
That's a good one.
You know what, Marty? I would have been suspended so often in my early days in this business. Like some people that didn't know me well enough didn't, but I used to do that all the time. Like when we were at Headline Sports and we were working these ridiculous shifts, like we'd be constantly flipping each other the bird, but people on the periphery wouldn't understand. Like, why would you do that? It's like, yeah, you gotta be on the inside here. You get like, you know, so anyway, that's hilarious. That was the unexpected breaking news across the hockey wire today.
Yeah.
Both was Alex Lyon. Hey, you know what I was asking you earlier about guys that you talk to and maybe, you know, just try to learn from their situations. You were a teammate of Jerry Mayhew way back in the day, right?
Right.
I look at him. He's 29, finally got a good, I mean, and had been really, really good his last few years in the AHL. Finally got a call up this year, put up some goals with Philly, went to Anaheim, put up some goals there. Like, essentially, he was on a 20-goal pace in the NHL this year as he finally gets a chance. Do you look at guys like Mayhew and just say, see, like, this is still very much possible?
So it's really funny you bring him up. He's one of the guys who called me last summer, and he was deciding between Philly and Anaheim where his offers, and he wanted my background on, like, the whole Ducks organization and asking about all them. And, you know, we spent like 20 minutes on the phone talking about it. So, yeah, for sure. We're super similar situations. And, you know, I'm so happy for him to see him finally get his breakthrough and get his chance. And, you know, it's crazy to think that guys like that can be stuck in the AHL or wherever for how many years. And you don't even know it because, you know, they just never get an opportunity for whatever reason. But, you know, I think he obviously made the right decision in Philly, and then it worked out that Anaheim ended up getting him on waivers. So, yeah, it's all it is. It just takes one chance and one opportunity, you know, some guy to get sick or some guy to get hurt, and you go up and, you know, you score a couple of goals in a couple of games, and all of a sudden, you know, you're making millions and you're in the NHL for the rest of your career. So, that's just the crazy part of the business that we're in. And, you know, it's such a fine line. And, you know, I think the AHL is full of so many good players, and not just, you know, I'm not just speaking for myself, but, you know, there's a ton of guys who are more than, you know, deserving of a chance. And you just never know what you're going to get when you get that chance. So I think that's also the hard part about it. And what's frustrating for so many people is that, you know, you'd like to think you can be there and you can do that. But, you know, you're not always in control of when you'll get that opportunity or chance. And for me, that's why I've played my whole career, my whole life, trying to play in the NHL, and to not get that opportunity yet is what fuels me to keep going and hopefully one day break through.
When does your family expect you back in Buffalo? And when is there going to be a Calder Cup party to go to celebrate what is now back-to-back championship in a four-year span?
We'll be heading home sometime later this week. I got one round of golf and my wisdom teeth still to be done here in Chicago.
Seriously?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's been put off for about 10 years now. It's about time I get it done. But, yeah, definitely a Calder Cup party. It will be sometime this summer. I don't know the date yet, but we will be bringing the cup to Craigburn. So we'll hopefully see you there, Marty. And last time they were aerating the greens at Craigburn, so we had to bring it to CCB, but for sure Craigburn this time. And I'll let you know that date when I get it.
Okay, since you're not talking golf, I just want to do a quick like survey. Best golf course you've ever played?
Ooh, probably Cypress Point in Cali.
Okay, so that's when you were with Anaheim, San Diego, you went up there or?
That was actually right after we won the Calder Cup in 19. I went on a trip. We played Pebble, Cypress, all the courses in that area. It's pretty good golf trip.
Best golfer, hockey player, golfer you've played with?
I hate to say it, but Greg McKegg, who's on the Rangers. He's an absolute stick. He played with Tim and Leggio when you couldn't come to the National in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You replaced me with a really, really good player, so that's good. biggest money game you've ever seen on the golf course? Because, you know, there's stories you watch The Last Dance. Michael Jordan plays these heavy, heavy money games. So the biggest money game you've ever seen on the golf course, you don't have to name names. Or if you want to name names, you don't have to name the money. But did it get high?
Oh, yeah. At Craigburn, we play Wolf. There's a group of four of us. Everyone at the course knows who we are, and when we all get together, it gets pretty crazy. And there are a couple of double down presses and birdies on 17 and 18, and it was in the four figures.
Oh, okay. So we're not Jordan six figures games, but we're up there. That's good. Got to pay up on the in the parking lot Venmo, or do you get the rain checks on that?
No, you pay up, and usually my one guy there, Barry, if I beat him, he will try to pay me more in cash and not in Venmo so that there's no trace of it. But we also got a shout out too. One day we needed a fourth in that group, and Timmy Faulkner joined in, and he got rinsed for some pretty big money, and it was great. We ended up letting him off the hook, obviously, but it was funny to see him shaking and throwing clubs. I think I chipped in on 18 and really hammered him.
So Duffer, that's PGA Tour, PGA professional, not PGA Tour, PGA professional, like Tim Faulkner that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So he plays like these local tournaments with all the golf pros from courses and whatnot. And he's got a little bit of a temper, which is great. I'm also in the fantasy football league with him at Barbill in East Aurora, which is kind of very comical. But anyway, last but not least, toughest hole at Craig Byrne.
Oh, I don't think it's obviously the toughest hole, 14, but for whatever reason, I'm either making birdie or like a 10 on that hole. And the guys in that game always love to press me, even if I had a good drive, because that second shot, there's just something in my head that I can't get over it. But
I think Leggio put three in the water last week there, exactly what you're talking about. He had like the best drive ever, and it was 195 yards out on the par five, and he put like three in the water.
Yeah, for sure. I think four is probably the hardest hole in my mind, but for whatever reason, 14, I make huge numbers on.
Oh, well, I know where to press you next time. So
we also have to, we can't forget another good golf game is when we were in Rochester. I think I got a free dinosaur barbecue out of you after that.
So I got to tell the story though, Patsy. You failed to put the right circumstances. So I played in a volleyball league, a beach volleyball league with a buddy of mine like the week before. And the sand was hard because of the rain that day. And I dove for a ball and landed on the ribs, like right on a hump, a hard hump. I swear I had like broken ribs, right? So, but we had that golf trip to Rochester. We played, what did we play in the morning? We played
Country Club of Rochester.
Country Club of Rochester and then Oak Hill. By the time we got to Oak Hill, I could barely swing. Like I was on like good medication. I could barely swing. So yeah, I lost and then had to buy dinosaur barbecue later that night, which I'm happy to oblige and to pay up. That's what I do.
I will say though, it was like playing with like Mark Wahlberg or something at Oak Hill with Marty walking around. Everybody was like, "Oh, Marty Brown. Hey, Marty. Hey, Marty." Like every corner he took. Our caddy was like scared to go up to me. He's like, "Is that Marty Braun who played for the Sabres?" We're like, "Yeah." And it was pretty funny. So we got a good chuckle out of that. But yeah, definitely his name carries some weight in Rochester.
Andrew, this is every day in my life now. You know that.
So. Oh, yeah.
And when I'm by myself, it's, "Where's Marty? Where's Marty?" So yeah. So it's okay. There could be far worse problems and situations to find yourself in. But honestly, what a thrill. The smile says it all. Enjoy everything in Chicago before you come home, and have a great summer. We look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, Evan, for having me, guys. A lot of fun.
Those were some pretty good stories, and I can't emphasize enough just how great it is to see genuine smiles on the heels of success. And that is that's what Andrew Podorowski's wearing right now.
Oh, it's a smile of winning, right? It's a smile of accomplishment, and also a smile because the check's in the mail for him telling everybody that people just like are impressed by my presence at Oak Hill of all places. I don't think Oak Hill is very impressed by me, but that's okay.
Well, what's impressive is, you know, the ability to excel at multiple sports. I think most people just are in awe of somebody being great at one thing, but when you cross over into something else, and clearly you're pretty good at golf, Podorowski's really good at golf, really? And yet you both recognize that others are incredible at the sport. Why don't we do something a little different here to wrap up the show? Like three other sports that you would love to have taken a crack at, but ultimately excelled at in your life.
Okay. That's a really tough one. And because I'm watching Wimbledon these days, when I was a kid, like tennis, like being like Pete Sampras, Andre Agassi, Roger Federer, like that level of elite, Johnny McEnroe, right?
No,
like
Bjorn Borg was Bjorn, too early.
Well,
for
yeah,
you?
Stefan Edberg, Boris Becker, like those guys were all like Ivan Lendl,
Pat
like,
Cash.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember the long hair.
The long hair, yes. Yeah. But anyway, like tennis, oh, I played so much tennis as a kid. I wish I would have been like playing at Wimbledon on the grass courts and all of it. But yeah, so tennis would have been one. I think baseball is another. Playing 160 some games and every day going to the ballpark and beautiful scenery and nice weather and staying in the city 4 or 5 days at a time. Like, I just think that would have been a lot of fun. And I'm a huge baseball fan and I love the game. So that would have been great. And three, this maybe has gained more momentum the last few years, is a Formula One driver.
Aww,
like living in Monaco. Huh? Did I steal your?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, I'm sorry, but I'm just saying, like having to drive these cars and then go like live in Monaco and do all of that. So, like, it would have been so good. But anyway,
you just want to stash your money somewhere.
Well, that the money would have been good, but I could have picked soccer for money because I mean these guys get paid a lot of money. And if Ovi can score a goal in a soccer game, I mean I could have scored a goal in a soccer game.
Yeah, I wish I'd had the courage to pursue auto racing. I think I was always fascinated by go-karts, but definitely always loved watching auto racing from a very, very young age and still enjoying a redo of it now, thanks to, you know, Drive to Survive and all that. So auto racing would be on the list. This one will surprise you. This will, because it's hard to envision yourself as a professional in what is basically viewed as an amateur sport, but we all know that beyond the confines of amateur status, there are, you know, professional events, shall we say, world championships in track and field.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So
yes.
If you're like a big, big, big star in that, it's appearance money, result money, that kind of thing. And
like you're saying Bolt's type, like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, I loved track and field as a kid, you know, and I kind of wish I had stuck with it through high school and then just, you know, never obviously envisioning, but just when you were talking to me off air about this idea, I was like, you know, it would be pretty cool. Like sprinting, hurdling, whatever, in front of 100,000 people in some crazy, you know, global stadium. Like that would be.
Well, we did grow up in the era of like Ben Johnson, Carl Lewis, Brake Battle, and Donovan Bailey, Michael Johnson. So that was big back in those days for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously lacrosse would be, you know, the other one.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's too close to the heart not to. And whether it would have been, you know, finding success in a small town, relatively speaking, like Peterborough or Whitby, you know, where I grew up in Ontario, or New Westminster or Burnaby or Victoria, BC, to have that opportunity to go from being, you know, like a good local lacrosse player to the jump of the National Lacrosse League, even though it is still so far down in the level of professional sports as far as wide recognition in North America, I can't imagine what a thrill. And that's why I love the game so much, because I still see that in all the players today who never, ever take for granted the opportunity to play in front of 18,000 in Banditland. Like
automobile racing, which is hundreds of millions of dollars, to lacrosse, who's for the love of the game. That's awesome, Duffer. I love
it. And track and field, which is really obscure in the context of, you know, trying to put it under professional sports, so to speak, right? Yeah.
I don't know what kind of dollar figure I can put to that, other than if you get really, really good endorsement deals.
Yeah, really good. Maybe I'm just partial to like swag.
Yes. Yes.
Head to toe in Adidas, right? Like,
dude,
I would have been.
Dude, knowing you and how you pay attention to what you wear on the broadcast and everything, you imagine having to gear up for this duel of a race, and then you have your gold shoes and you're like, your outfit would be laid out from top to bottom.
I'm going to do some online shopping as soon as we're done here. All right. Thank you for lining up Andrew Podorowski. He was just a treat to deal with today. And honestly, has me thinking of next year already, because boy, we would love to see him get his big break, wouldn't we?
I'd love to see him get his big break in Buffalo too. That would be really cool for a local boy. We know the Sabres want players that want to be here. I would think Potsy would want to be here. So I'm just saying.
All right. We'll see you next live from the draft in Montreal. Yes. Can't wait to tee it up there. We'll see you soon.